8th chapter of Isaiah, verses 9b through 14. If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness and your gloom be like the noonday. God will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. If you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of Yahweh honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, serving your own interests, or pursuing your own affairs, then you shall take delight in the source of life, and I will make you ride upon the heights of the earth.
So where I'm from in Texas, water is a very valuable commodity and regarded in some communities as more valuable than even crude oil. Underneath the ground all over the state, there are thousands of aquifers that are flowing beneath your feet. Bodies of water like lakes and streams and even the mighty Rio Grande River at the Texas-Mexico border are fed not primarily by rainwater, but by these hidden underground rivers. And unless you're digging for a well, you might have no idea that there's such life-giving flowing streams below your feet. These aquifers will flow into whatever empty vessel they can find, such as limestone caves that were carved out thousands of years ago. When the water flows into these caves, they often create a deep well, such as the one shown up on the screen. Those kids are jumping into water. I know it looks like they're just like jumping into the great expanse, but they're jumping from like a top cliff down deep into the water. The one here showed up on the screen is known as Jacob's Well in Wimberley, Texas. And these types of swimming holes were all over the place in my college town. And on weekends, we'd take a picnic and, yes, a nice cooler filled with nice drinks to hang out and jump off these limestone cliffs into the tunnel of water below. While these kids are incredibly brave jumping into the deep, these bodies of water have always been a bit scary for me. The water, yes, is so clear, cleaned from the process of being filtered through rock and stone. But when you walk to the edge of that cliff and you look down, you can see how far down, you can't see how far down it actually goes. It just gets darker and darker. Standing at the shoreline of an ocean feels so different than standing at the precipice of a dark tunnel filled with water. The things that would run through my mind before I would jump were, what kind of things are lurking down below? Is there some kind of prehistoric water cave monster that's been waiting for me all these millions of years to finally wait for my body to hit the water for its next meal? And if I were to fall in and sink to the bottom, how far would I have to go down to actually hit the floor? I'm always so struck by the use of water in the scriptures, and particularly in both of our scriptures this morning. The psalm uses the imagery of a river converging from many streams. And the scripture from Isaiah speaks of a fountain of water in a lush garden. Water is so central to our well-being, to our survival, and it is the life force that connects us all and all of us to creation around us. For me personally, my body doesn't just need water to survive, but my spirit feels most at home near a body of water. It's one reason Jessica and I hope to never move any west of Ashland Avenue, because we have to get to Lake Michigan on many weeks when our spirits feel parched and dry. We need to see a different horizon than the concrete jungle in which we live and work, to be reminded of our connection to something much bigger than ourselves. And at the same time, as we have seen this past week in flooding in Texas, the recent hurricane in the Caribbean, and with our youth leading the global climate strike marches this week, we are also reminded of our deep connection to creation through water in another way. That our decisions and destruction of the earth have a deep impact on the ecosystems in which we live and are created in. The roars and forces of water get stronger and dangerous when we don't live and act out that deep sense of connection by which we were created in the image of God. Water in the Christian tradition can be considered somewhat of a main character, if you will, for the story of God and God's people. In the scriptures, it is actually a sign and a symbol of the spiritual realm at work, of God's presence with us. The Bible is actually saturated with water. From the first moments of creation, as God split the sea and the sky, to sweeping upon the earth with great destruction in the story of the great flood. The waters of the Red Sea split in two as the Israelites were walking into freedom from bondage in Egypt. It also burst forth in the desert from a cracked rock while they were wandered along their journey. It held a giant sea monster for Jonah, and it held Jesus as he walked on it. Water ran down Jesus' head as he was baptized, and he poured it upon the disciples' feet as one of the last acts of his life. And water in our Christian tradition also serves as God's unspoken reminder of how Meister Eckhart puts it, found in our quote in our bulletin this morning, that God is like a great underground river that cannot be dammed up, that the presence of God cannot be contained or confined, owned or claimed, but that the presence of God is like a creek rather than a private pool, like a water fountain rather than a Nalgene water bottle, like a river rather than a reservoir. The presence of God is ever flowing, always on the move, constantly shaping the landscape around it, and relentless in bringing healing and new life. And how often has the Christian church seen itself and hears its call instead to be dam builders instead of water dispensers? Siphoning off God's presence from those who believe differently, call the divine by another name, or for whom, God forbid, actually questions God in the first place. Our religious difference and diverse ways of creating meaning in the world for some can feel like it does to be standing on that cliff looking down into that deep, deep water, unsure of the mystery below. And for some, while we may see that mystery as a grand adventure, for others, spiritual difference can feel quite terrifying. The theologian Matthew Fox thinks another thing. He connects Meister Eckhart's quote and challenge of thinking of God as this great river. But he also challenges us to see our own spirituality and religious traditions not as containers for God to be held in, but for different wells by which we draw life-giving water from too. Matthew Fox's perspective is that there are many wells available to us through different faith traditions, different denominations of each faith tradition, and yes, even non-faith ways of making meaning in the world. And that drawing from the well of Christianity doesn't mean that the wells of Islam or Judaism or Native American spirituality aren't life-giving too. But that by diving deep into our own tradition also means diving deep into the deep undercurrent that connects us all. Friends, when I read the vision statement that we welcomed into our community just last week, I hear the rippling waters of that deep undercurrent that connects and calls out to all of us. Our vision statement reads, "As an ever-widening, inclusive Christian community, we are called to transform ourselves and our world to embody God's radical love, healing, and hope." And in that, I hear a claiming of what kind of well we see ourselves being in this world. I hear a church who sees itself through our own particular scope of our traditions and our values and shared beliefs, but who is also called to continue to ever widen that scope of God's way of being present in this world. As the prophet Isaiah puts it, I see a church who is not interested in pointing the finger or pursuing our own narrow interests, but one who is about the work of repairing and restoring. I hear a church that recognizes that we aren't alone in that call to offer God's love, healing, and hope. And I hear a vision of a church with a widened sense of identity that as we live into God's call for us, we will look different in the future because of it. A few years ago when Jessica and I lived in Austin, close to this well in Wimberley, Texas, we lived in Austin, which was very close to Wimberley. We were members of a United Methodist church called Trinity United Methodist Church, a church that would be a kindred spirit to you all in considering itself an ever-widening, inclusive Christian community. And it is there that we met and became close to a woman in the congregation named Joan. Now, at first glance, Joan was a stereotypical church lady. She was a cradle United Methodist, served on the United Methodist Women's Conference Board. She was an expert baker at all the potlucks, and she was an alto in our church choir. But what you would never guess about Joan, unless you sat down to get to know her, was that she was also a member of a women's Wiccan circle in Austin. And while this wasn't something she was really trying to hide about herself, most people in the congregation didn't know this about Joan. Let's just say it didn't really come up at the Women's Guild luncheons or at choir practice, but when it did come up, she would describe her own personal faith identity as a Methowitch, a Methodist and a witch. I loved Joan, she was great. But many in the congregation didn't actually find this out about Joan until her funeral in 2011, after she had died of an aggressive form of cancer. And the very next day after she died, this women's guild surrounded this family with support and care, showing up to her home to support her spouse and children with casseroles and flowers in hand. But when they arrived, to their surprise, they also found Joan's Wiccan circle attending to the last rites that are given in that tradition, which included washing Joan's body, preparing it for burial. Now, the Christian Women's Guild was, of course, shocked by all this. They thought they were going to show up, that probably the funeral home had taken Joan at that point, and they were simply there to provide good food and hugs. But here they were, right? Among Joan's other faith community, among Joan's other way of making meaning in her life and in this world. And there they were all together in their grief of losing their friend. Now, Joan's Wiccan friends were not shy whatsoever. They almost immediately asked this women's guild to jump in and give them a hand. And after Joan had been washed, part of that ritual of death also included wrapping her body. And none of them could do that work alone, so they had to work together. So the Women's Guild jumped right in alongside this Wiccan circle, unsure of each other, from very different faith traditions, different understandings of the divine, but each called to care for their friend, each called to tend to her spirit after death, each called to widen their notion of community in that moment. And after their work was done, the Christian Women's Guild did the really good Christian thing and invited the Wiccan Women's Circle to this Methodist-style memorial service. And there, the Wiccan women joined along and jumped alongside of them to serve punch and cookies at the reception. And as months went on, instead of going their separate ways, they continued to call on each other from their collective care for their friend, but also because of this deeper connection that they felt with one another. They just kept hanging out together. And they created like this Ladies Who Lunch group by going out to local restaurants in Austin a couple of times a week. They served at the local women's shelter a couple of times together as well. And finally, when the Wiccan community actually was looking for a larger space to gather in, the church was the one to actually open their chapel each week for them to gather in. Both groups were drawn to each other in this kind of inexplainable way, but in the process of grieving their friend, they also tapped into a deeper connection that exists, which brought them into community with each other. Their communities of faith and spiritual expression were widened, and they found healing. They found kinship. They found an expression of God or the divine in ways they would have never experienced before without having found each other. Friends, our new vision statement claims that we are an inclusive and ever-widening Christian community, reminding us that our continuous call is not only to welcome in all of those who would come through our doors, but also to dive deep into the wisdom available to us when we share of that greater connection that we believe is at work and within. Each of us diving down into the spiritual depths in our own unique way. I'm grateful for a community that hears its call to support diverse spiritual expressions and to name God in a myriad of ways. May our new mission and vision statements take us ever deeper towards that great underground river that cannot be dammed up. And may our spiritual well found in this community lead us to a wider understanding of God and to one another. Amen.